Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Fino Payments Bank Q2 FY24 earnings conference call hosted by Go India Advisors. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mrs. Sheetal Khanduja from Go India Advisors. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Arshia. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Fino Payments Bank earnings call to discuss the Q2 and H1 FY24 results. We have on the call with us today Mr. Rishi Gupta, Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Ketan Merchant, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Anup Agarwal, Head Investor Relations. We must remind you that the discussion on today's call may include certain forward-looking statements and must be therefore viewed in conjunction with the risks that the company faces. I now request Mr. Rishi Gupta to take us through the company's business outlook and financial highlights, subsequent to which we will open the floor for Q&A. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Sheetal. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today for the Fino Payments Bank Q2 FY24 earnings call. We have been consistently doing well quarter after quarter, and this quarter embarks another milestone of our business volumes. We're happy to share that we are going as per our strategy and priorities. Before we get into business and financial updates, let me quickly update you on the strategic aspect of our business. Our TAM strategy, which is transaction, acquisition, and monetization, is making good progress and is aligning with our long-term goals. For those who may not be familiar, allow me to provide a brief explanation of our TAM strategy. Transaction phase is the first phase we have built, through which we have built a large distribution network of merchants, totaling 15.1 lakh merchants as of September 2023. We are on plan to achieve 2 million merchants by FY26. We have successfully executed this phase and crossed a total throughput of 86,000 crore in Q2 compared to 60,000 crore in Q2 last year. Our geographical presence of merchants, branches, and touchpoints across the country, with North and East contributing to 67% of the total distribution. We will continue to deepen our merchant density and enhance coverage in West and South, ensuring last-mile reach. This forms a strong foundation for the SFB in the future. Acquisition phase. We are presently in the acquisition phase, where we are actively broadening our presence in both physical as well as digital space. We have been maintaining our acquisition spree of more than 2.5 lakh new customers every month. Our renewal income has grown by 95% on a year-on-year basis. This continues to significantly strengthen our foundation for the annuity income. As the acquisition becomes stronger, some of the revenues from transaction income, which is largely off-us customers, have started to gradually shift to acquisition revenue or on-us customers. Monetization. Focus and impetus of transaction and acquisition phase with increased UPI penetration enables higher customer stickiness, contributing to higher annuity income on a year-on-year basis and future opportunities of cross-sell. This will come to play more as an SFB. Digital Fino 2.0. We have been actively growing our digital presence, as I've said in the last presentation as well, leading to increased penetration. During the quarter, we opened more than 50,000 savings accounts digitally through our FinoPay app. Our digital banking segment continues to exhibit robust growth, with digital throughput reaching 23,000 crore in Q2 FY24, representing an impressive 120% year-on-year growth. In Q2 FY24, FinoPay, which is our digital app, downloads has experienced a 167% increase on a year-on-year basis, totaling to 12.6 lakhs. We continue to contribute more than 1.25% of the total transaction volume in the UPI ecosystem, outperforming many established banks. Thanks to the government and regulatory initiatives around Digital India Stack, at Fino, we are driving one of our biggest stack changes of going digital. This behavioral change from cash to digital is irreversible, and it's catching up across all strata of society as well as is present across the nation, that is both in rural as well as urban. Fino is also moving in similar direction, with more and more customers becoming digitally savvy. Out of our total customer base of 9 million customers, roughly 3.6 million or 40% of our customers are actively using digital service, and this number is only growing faster. NPCI statistics show that the share ratio of cash withdrawal, which is ATM, micro ATM, AEPS and UPI, was 45 to 55 in quarter 1 FY23 and now has become 33 to 67. That is, nearly two-thirds of the transactions are now on the UPI platform. Our cash withdrawal business moved from 64% in quarter 1 FY23 to 34% FY24 of the overall transaction throughput, much in line with what is happening in the ecosystem. UPI adaptability is growing faster, it's growing at a faster pace than anticipated. Fino is also building products around digital ecosystem, both on the B2B as well as on the B2C. Quarterly performance. Now let me update on the business aspect. Our quarterly revenue demonstrated a substantial 18.2% increase on year-to-year basis, amounting to 358.6 crores. Over the half-year period, we observed a 19.3% year-on-year growth in revenue, much in line with our 20% target as a guidance of growth on a year-on-year basis. PAT for the quarter registered a robust 42% on a year-on-year growth, while over the half-year it is even more impressive with 60% growth. Our growth in high-margin products, encompassing CASA and CMS, now represents 30% of the total revenue in quarter 2 FY24, marking an increase from 26% a year ago. Our own revenue share increased from 65% in quarter 2 24 to 69% in quarter 2 24, which means 65% in quarter 1 24 to 69% in quarter 2 24, leading to a net revenue margin expansion of 140 bps. CMS volumes have grown 40% on a year-on-year basis in quarter 2 24 from 10,500 crores to 15,000 crores on account of new partnerships and incremental volumes of existing partners. Our transaction business has been moderately impacted in H1 24 with ecosystem challenges specifically on AEPS front. However, we believe the same would phase out in H2 24. Regulator, banks and other fintechs have established controls to ensure all potential risks are mitigated. We are continuously investing in technology for enhancing the capacity for incremental volumes and building new product capabilities in digital space. We are revamping our technology stack by making the core banking platform much lighter and faster. This means we are moving out some of the functionalities to outside the core. We have already started the journey of changing our core banking partner over the next 15-18 years so as to be technology ready for the future. Consequent to our board approval in July 23, we are actively preparing for submitting our application for the SFB and are also exploring avenues of corporate restructuring, as we mentioned in the last meeting. In the broader perspective, fostering digital penetration along with profitability remains a pivotal role in a strategic roadmap. We remain steadfast in our commitment to delivering superior performance and enhancing shareholder value. With that, I'd like to hand over to Ketan Merchant, our CFO, who will run us through the financial results. Over to you, Ketan.
Thank you, Rishi. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us today once again on our earnings call. I'm delighted to announce that we build a consistent trajectory of profitable quarters. We have continuously achieved strong performance and present quarter is no exception. It marks another resilient and profitable period. As Rishi mentioned, our performance this quarter reaffirms our commitment to attaining our future goals, particularly emphasizing our 20% year-on-year growth which we've committed earlier. During the quarter, we further deepened our distribution network with around 68,000 new merchants onboarded in the quarter. This, coupled with digital penetration, allowed us to improve accessibility and engagement for our customers. Moving towards financial performance, for Q2 FY24, our total revenue stood at 358.6 crores, up by 18.2%. Net revenue margin expanded by 140 bps to 33%. This is in line with our intended objective of focus on growth of high-margin product and has a direct impact on our bottom line to the extent of 4.5 crores. Our EBITDA margins have increased to 12.9% in Q2 FY24 from 10.1% in Q2 FY23. EBITDA has grown by 51% YOY to 46.2 crores in Q2 24. Our PAT increased by 41.5% on a year-on-year basis to 19.5 crores. During the quarter, our total throughput exceeded 86.6 thousand crores, marking a substantial 43% year-on-year growth. Furthermore, as Rishi mentioned, our digital throughput experienced an impressive 120% year-on-year increase, reaching 23,000 crores plus, and now represents 27% of throughput. These strong performance indicators lay a robust foundation for the future cross-selling opportunities, allowing us to capitalize on our existing base and expanding our services. Just a quick recall of our H1 numbers. Our total revenue stood at 706.9 crores, a 19.3% year-on-year growth. Our EBITDA margins have increased to 12.3% in H1 from 9.1% in the previous year H1. EBITDA has grown by 60.3% YOY to 86.7 crores. Our PAT increased by 60% to a number of 38.2 crores. This is for H1 24. Moving on to the segmental business performance. Our revenues from CASA, savings and current account, have increased by 38% year-on-year, reaching to 75.2 crores. This growth is mainly driven by a significant surge in our renewal income, which has increased by 95% on a year-on-year basis and now stands at 30.3 crores for the quarter. The notable rise in our account subscription and renewal rate indicates the loyalty of our customers and underscores our status as a preferred bank. This is the cornerstone of our planned ambition of SFB. In our Q4 23 earnings call, we had stated that we will deepen our customer base in South, and here I am with some statistics. We are happy to share that in a highly populated Karnataka and Tamil Nadu, our customer base has increased by 129% and 92% respectively for the half year period. We've also seen expansion in number of customers actively engaging with our digital services. Out of the total customer base of 9 million, 3.6 million or 40% are digitally active customers. We are consistently adding more than 2.5 lakh new customers every month, and more than 50% of these new customers are digitally active. This ongoing trend is expected to contribute to robust growth in deposits and as we expand our customer base. Our average deposits grew by 53% on a YOY basis for the quarter. The other key product which we essentially have is CMS, which is, you know, our driver and a high margin product. Revenue from CMS stood at 33.5 crores, up by 38% in Q2. In H1 FY24, the revenue saw an increase of 54%. On a YOY basis, throughput in CMS surged by 40% up to 14,685 crores. It showed an impressive growth of 55% YOY for the half year period. Out of the total throughput, NBFC and MFI sector contributed 65% in quarter two as compared to 92% when we started off the business in quarter two of FY22. With an established diversified network of 189 partners, a strategic emphasis has been laid on partner diversification, resulting in a sustainable CMS growth. We have strong presence across 14 states, wherein average monthly throughput is over 100 crores in Q2 FY24. This number was at 12 states in Q2 FY23. Here again, emphasis on diversification of geography as well as industries for CMS. Overall, CASA and CMS continue to be our high-margin products, delivering better than our expectations. These businesses are poised for significant growth, resulting in margin expansion and boosting the profitability of the company. As Rishi mentioned, the pace of UPI uptake is faster than anticipated, and we are uniquely placed to ride the UPI wave in our target segment. Just to elaborate, in our endeavor to make customers more digitally savvy, there is continued effort to convert a micro ATM and APS customer into a CASA customer, And that is yielding results as evident in our digital growth, which we earlier mentioned is 120% on a quarter-by-quarter basis for the year. While transaction business, remittance and cash withdrawal business are witnessing some amount of system challenges, customer's funnel, which is the hook which we use for enhancing our high-margin product, is maintained, and that is evident from our transaction volumes. Our payment services segment in B2B space, which are equally high margin, specifically on the UPI paying product, is contributing 18% of the digital throughput in Q2 24. To conclude, I want to emphasize that we are successfully progressing through the acquisition phase, building strong foundation and infrastructure for monetization phase. In all of this, we continue to maintain our cost at reasonable level so that PAT growth continues to be 2 to 2.25x of our revenue growth. This is our stated objective which we had maintained, and we are working around the same. With this, I'll just hand over the session for any questions.
We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Mr. Ashish from Infinity Alternatives. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, sir. And Rishi and Ketan, congratulations for a good set of numbers. A couple of things. One is we saw a digital revenues kind of coming in at 18-odd crores for the quarter. What is the kind of gross margin on this product? Because I can't see that on the next slide.
Yeah, Ashish, is that the one or...
The second one was in relation to the CapEx. If I look at in the 6 months, we've invested 50-odd crores in CapEx. Is that something which is which you expect to remain at elevated levels going forward, or how, what's your outlook around that?
Okay. Let me take the first one first. You are right. As we've been saying it off, and Rishi and myself alluded a bit in terms of our statement as well, that on the digital side we've been building our stack coming out. The margin out here, digital comprises of the payment services, the UPI pay in which I alluded towards, and that's contributed to around 20% in addition to the retail UPI thing which we are doing. There, as we mentioned it off, our margin is equally high. We are looking at around a 48 to 50% kind of a margin coming out in these products which we've set. Having said that, I think it's the beginning. Rishi earlier mentioned that it's the beginning of our digital journey, and we will continue to do that. Second question of yours comes on the CapEx side. Here, I just go back to our statement earlier as well at the beginning of the year or the quarter four, that we will continue to invest into technology and digital. The genesis of our capital was also to make this kind of stack. If you ask me the question, how does the outlook look in terms of the CapEx, we will continue to invest over next 3, 4, 5 quarters in terms of technology and digital. The impact of that coming in the P&L, if that is what you were alluding towards, in the stated objective which we have mentioned, which I just concluded my statement with, that a 20% growth in top line and a 2.25x kind of a growth of that revenue coming in the bottom line, that already factors some of these capex which is essentially coming. And the testimony of digital starting to give this yield results is also a point to reckon. So that's where we essentially stand.
Sure, sir. Sure, thanks. And the other question was in relation to SFB. When do you think you can, on the SFB and the M&A, what are the timing timelines looking like on both of those?
On the SFB, more or less our application is ready. We are doing the final touches on that. So in the next 1 month or so, we should be able to file it with the regulator. On the SFB, we are looking for, on the merger, we are looking forward to the guidance from our holding company, Paytech, because they are waiting for some internal approvals to happen. Only then they will formally write to us for going ahead with the merger.
Sure. Okay. Thanks, Rishi, and wish you all the best. I'll come back in the queue again.
Thank you, Ashish.
Thank you. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Ms. Shreya Shivani from CLSA India Private Limited. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Congratulations on your numbers. I have two questions. First, it's not related to the business, but something that came in the media article about some employees undertaking certain fraudulent activities. So can you help us understand that better, and what are the steps that you're taking to control such issues that could happen in an organization? My second question is on the cross-sell products. So you had mentioned in the last couple of quarters that pilot cross-selling of loans are at the pilot stage for the merchants, etc. So if you can give us any update of how are the pilot programs going, what kind of experiences are you building in, and what kind of demand is coming in, that would be useful. Thank you.
Thank you, Shreya. So let me first come to the first question. So you are right, there was an article, and that actually came when we reported to the stock exchange. After that the article came. So there were some unauthorized actions and representations made by some alleged staffs as such. We also believe there is some contributory negligence or possibility of collusion on part of the certain complainants, which has led to some abnormalities and non-adherence to the regular process of a bank. So that's the broad thing which is there. This complaints came to us in the month of May, June. Post that, we had appointed KPMG on our own as management CEO Moto to look at the complaints independently, both at the field level. Largely, this was field-related complaints. Post that, we have also filed some police complaints and taken actions against some of our employees, which we found were not doing as per the stated process and in the right ethics of the bank. Till now, we have not received any legal case or legal complaint, or any law enforcement agencies have been informed by the complainants against the bank. The bank has not benefited or lost any amount on account of this. So, prima facie, based on this, there is no liability or impact on the bank as such, except for some of the employees and some of these things which have come up in the media and the reputation, which got impacted account of that. We would also like to reiterate that this has nothing to do with customer accounts or customer money, which continues to be safe and secure, and we continue to work on our plan. Post this investigations and everything else, we have further strengthened some of the processes, some of our employees' policies and knowledge nuggets and everything else, so that this kind of thing doesn't happen in the future. So the company has taken all requisite steps which are required when such kind of an event happens, and I think we are in control of this situation which is there. And as I mentioned, there is no legal liability which has come on Fino, and there's been no case till now on us. So that's broadly on the first question. The second question on the cross-sell product per se. So when we look at the cross-sell, lending is obviously one of the products which we would look at referring to. But one thing which is coming on our way from taking it to the market is the FLDG. Expectation, because we were talking to some of the NBFC partners that if without FLDG, because you know payments bank cannot issue FLDG as such, this matter was in gray area till the time RBI came out with that 5% FLDG regulation. So post that, we have seen most of the NBFC players now insisting of 5% FLDG. So to that extent, we are not in a position to provide because at the payments bank level, we can't provide any FLDG. So because of which, we are feeling constrained on account of that. While we see there is an inherent demand from our merchants and customers for lending opportunities, but because of the drying up of lines, specifically because of the FLDG issue, we have not made substantial progress as far as lending is concerned. But otherwise, when it comes to payments ecosystem or UPI ecosystem, I think there has been, as I just mentioned in the previous question, nearly 5% of our revenue now is coming from digital. So we believe, at least on that part, we are doing quite well, and we believe that business will continue to grow as we go forward.
Got it. So the cross sell on the lending part specifically, it is still something which remains restricted for you, right? Because of this, did I read that right?
Yeah, you are right, because of the FLDG constraint. That I think will come over as we move into an SFB mode.
Okay. Understood. Okay, this is useful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we take the next question, we would like to remind the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Mr. Harsh Shah from Reliance General Insurance. Please go ahead, sir.
Congratulations, team, on the good numbers. So one of the questions which I wanted to understand is that how is UPI impacting our profitability? So we have moved in-house. So what are the economies we can see here?
Good question. Actually, some of it was captured in my opening remarks also. And I had spoken about this in the last presentation. Because when people look at the UPI, they only look at one angle of UPI, which is that UPI is a zero MDR product. But I think the life has moved beyond that. Obviously, if you can charge a small amount on UPI, it can lead to a substantial profitability for us and many other players in the market, specifically the banks, so to say. But let me talk about our UPI strategy, and maybe sometime if you plan to come to our office, we'll be more than happy to take you through our entire digital stack and the digital offering. But from a high level, I would say, see, as I mentioned, nearly 40% of our customers have become digitally active. We did 37 crores of transactions on the UPI, and it contributes to 1.25% of the overall throughput in the country. So as I mentioned also in my remarks, is that India is moving digital, and UPI is driving that digital wave in a way. So usage of cash is coming down, and it is coming down at a faster pace than one would have anticipated 3-4 years back. So this is inevitable. This is irreversible, that UPI wave can be curtailed, or any other thing can happen on the UPI side. UPI, further, the government is also putting a lot of other rails on the UPI stack. So for us, what does it mean? One is, obviously, if the MDR comes, it will going to substantially improve our profitability. But having said that, UPI also becomes the mainstay for our CASA customers. A higher transaction on the UPI platform or a UPI active customer gives us higher volume of business. It also leads to higher renewal income. It also has a higher balances. So from a UPI active customer, we see the transaction volumes are higher, the balances are higher, and the renewal rates are higher. That's on the B2C side. On the B2B side, as I mentioned earlier, or Ketan mentioned, that we have started to provide UPI rails for paying products. Paying products are largely products where the merchants have to be paid. So in that process, we are seeing a huge growth coming in. So both on the B2C side as well as on the B2B side, UPI is substantially helping us to build our CASA base and to improve our profitability. Further, it can improve with the MDR. But having said that, I think this is something which we have to do, and we think this will drive the Fino from a physical to digital and will help us in taking a higher substantial number of accounts in the future as well.
Okay, got it. So one more thing on it. So what all products can we plan on a UPI stack, and are there any pipelines, launch pipelines there?
So on the UPI stack, just 1 minute. UPI stack, we have the normal UPI payment products which are there. We are also starting, we also started to open UPI stack. We have started to provide to our partners as well. We have also started to do UPI pay-in. Over and above that, we are looking at providing credit on UPI. We are also looking at UPI Lite. So whatever is there in the UPI ecosystem, including UPI Collect, so all those functionalities will actually be, most of it will be ready by March of 24. And with more functionalities, we expect the volumes to further go up on the UPI side, and also making our customers become active. In fact, one product like UPI Lite actually enables transactions of less than 2,000 rupees without the PIN, without the OTP. So it makes life simple for our set of customers.
Okay, got it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants who wish to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone phone. The next question is from the line of Mr. Ravi Mehta from Deep Financial Consultants Private Limited. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the call. Just extending the previous discussion, this the entire UPI stack and the whole host of services that you can provide, is it again more of a hook that to keep your customers engaged and hence more renewals, or it's a money-making proposition? Is it accretive to earnings? Some color on that.
So on the B2C side, so on the B2B side, there is obviously a charge which we make to the B2B partner, and through him we make money. On the UPI, on the B2C side, on the B2C side, there are two propositions. One is the P2P and the other is the P2M. P2M is now constitutes nearly 55% to 60% of the overall transaction volume. On the P2M side, while there is no charge currently, but there is a MeeT charge which we receive from Ministry of IT. And so that is over and above, that's a charge which we receive on the P2M side. It may not cover the full cost, but there is still some recovery which we do. On the customer side, this is a default option you have to give. It's like providing an internet account to a customer, or an app to a customer. You have to provide UPI. UPI is a default option now for every customer. If you don't have a UPI, probably he will not even open an account. So it is from that point of view that the UPI becomes critical to open an account. I will not say that because of UPI the balances are higher. I will say we have accounts because we have UPI.
Sure, sure. And one thing was mentioned in the annual report that you're working on hollowing the core so that, you know, every transaction doesn't hit the core. So is it more like you're trying to create a wallet kind of a structure where you enjoy a zero interest float, or if you can...
No. Very good question. I'm glad that you asked that question, because that's one of our projects which is we are monitoring at my level, and it is something which is very dear to my heart also. So, and this is something which is very important. I in fact covered that in my opening remarks also, but I'll reiterate. See, the world has changed in the last 5 to 7 years, where the volume of transactions were largely going through all core banking platforms, because the transaction volume in a bank account of a customer were not that many. Now with all the digital play coming in, UPI becoming one of the mainstay, on an average, we are seeing 40 transactions on UPI platform for our customers on a monthly basis. So if that volume of transactions actually start hitting my core platform on a daily basis, and which will further lead to some kind of slowness in the system, or some latency would come in, And because for every transaction, there are a lot of engines which have to run in parallel, especially when it comes to core banking platform. So, we are relatively a new bank compared to some of the older banks, but this is a challenge which is being faced across all banking ecosystem around the world. For bigger banks and old generation banks, it becomes more difficult to move some of the functionalities outside the core because of the legacy which they carry. In our case, fortunately for us, we had built a lot of things already outside the core in part of our phase one. As part of our phase two, which we are now implementing, in a way getting ready for 2030 plus, we are now moving a lot of functionalities which were still in the core banking platform outside the core and making the core very lighter, and it can then result in faster turnaround also. So not only that we are looking at hollowing the core, but we are also in the process of changing our core banking partner as such. And the work has already started. We are more than 6 months to 9 months into the process. We are hoping that in the next 15 to 18 months, we should be not only looking at a new banking partner, but also hollowing the code, which means that the entire control will come into us. I'll just give you one more example. In March of 2023, we actually moved our UPI switch. Till that point of time, like many other banks, the UPI switch was with a third-party service provider, and we were at the, in a way, not to say, but yes, in a way, at the mercy of that third-party service provider to give us the right kind of products and manage our growth. Post that, we have seen in the last 7 months, 8 months of our switch moving away from a third-party to an in-house control, and we have now, we have the switch in our in-house facilities. We have developed it as well as we manage it. So we are seeing a substantial growth. I would say more than double growth we have seen in the last 7 months with near zero technical declines and very, very low or limited, very little latency or maybe zero latency as such. So, and plus products. So going forward, technology will play a very important part in any bank because the entire ecosystem is becoming digitally savvy, and banks who don't invest in technology today will face a problem when we get into the future of the country, because if around 20 crore people are using UPI today, 5 years from now you will see 50 crore people using UPI, and that volume, if it starts coming and hitting your core banking or your existing technology platforms, you can imagine the amount of bloodbath which will be there on the banking systems. So good that we have started this about 6 to 9 months back.
So when we see capex spends of close to 50 crores in first half, it is towards these initiatives or something else?
So this is a mix of multiple initiatives. One is capacity also. So our volumes, as you see, 50% growth in capacity has happened. So we have to continuously to look at capacity increase. A lot of investments actually goes into security, cyber security, and other features also, software. The cost itself of technology solutions started to move up. And plus also it looks at some part of hollowing the core is also included in this. The core banking platform migration and everything is still not factored into this. That will come in the future months more as a capex. Probably Ketan can talk a bit on that.
Yeah, thank you, Rishi. Just to answer your question, question which Ashish asked, and you were alluding towards the 50 crore capex, that is largely on account of technology and digital. Rishi rightly bifurcated it off. We are also increasing our capacity. You know, the growth which we've seen, 1.6 lakhs crores of throughput, which is essentially coming, and that is also essentially growing. So we are building the technology and digital stack into this. We also in-house the UPI switch. And just to corroborate, since we are talking about the benefits of the HPC besides the agility, you know, the UPI switch essentially ended up giving at that point of time a 4.5 to 5 crores of bottom line impact coming as well to us. So we will continue to put a perspective in regards to specific point of Rishi in terms of the core banking. We started the project like any other change in core banking, it is a massive project. which will go up to 18 months as well, as Rishi said. From a business model perspective, I come back to the earlier conversation as well. The business model which we envisaged and which we have, you know, stated for the 20% growth and 2.25x of the profitability of that growth factors the depreciation coming on account of this, you know, in the years to come. As we speak this year there might be, you know, a minimal to no impact coming essentially on account of anything on the core banking, as in when the project progresses over next 3-4 quarters, the depreciation line on account of core banking will also be impacted, but it will be in line with the model which we have made.
Sure, that answers. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and 1 on your touchtone phone. The next question is from the line of Mr. Divyansh Gupta from Latent Advisors LLP. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Yes.
Hi. So one question follow up on the tech expense. So is the tech expense also being incurred for the SFB development? Because what I understand, RBI process, there's an in-principle approval, then a final approval, after which you can go live. There's the CISA audit and other things. So is the tech expense of tech efforts that are being taken right now are also to prepare ourselves for the SFB, which might be, let's say, 2 years down the line because the application takes time and other stuff? Or this is just purely for the payment bank optimizations?
So yes and no, I would say. So while this technology expense or the core banking expense doesn't include the platforms for underwriting or loan management system or loan origination system, that will come over and above once we have the in principle approval from the regulator. But having said that, still what we are building today will become more and more relevant as we move into an SFB. Because all of the core and the fact that a lot of things we are building is outside the core banking platform, which gives us the ability to tomorrow in line as a SFB, we'll be able to build a lot of things outside as well. So whatever we are doing now will definitely help us, no doubt it's largely for the payments bank, will definitely help us on the SFB side, whereas specific platforms on LOS, LMS will come at the subsequent date.
Got it. Understood. One data keeping question. I was going to the annual report, and in the operating expenses, there is this other expenditure, which is about 75% of the overall expenditure. Can you just throw some light, what are these expenses incurred on and what are the biggest categories and how much do they contribute to the overall expenses?
Yeah, Harsha. Sorry, Divyansh.
Yeah.
The RBI prescribes a particular format in which the Schedule 16 of the annual accounts is to be given, you know, operating expenses. Now, what happens is for a typical lending institution, you know, the key expense essentially, you know, becomes an interest expense and NII becomes a key driver. For us, if you've seen our income as well, other income constitutes, you know, 90%, and similarly, other expenses is nothing. If you see our presentation, slide 13, we call it as a product cost. Okay, so product cost is nothing. The way our business model works, we don't operate through fixed costs. We operate through variable cost, which is where the merchant and the entire ecosystem comes. In simple terms, a distribution cost which we end up giving to our agents who are variableized, you know, and linked to the sales, we call it as product cost. And becomes a part of the major expenses, and that is where we again say that around 70% plus of our OPEX base is variable in nature and is connected to this. In simple terms, product cost and the distribution cost.
Got it. So if our other income is around, let's say, 100 rupees, then out of that 100 rupees, 70 rupees will be the OPEX cost or the product cost, and that 70 rupees is more or less captured in that other expenses.
Yeah, to be very precise, this time, as I mentioned in one of my statements, this time I think the net margin which we see is around 33%. So giving by your example, 167 and 33. And from 33, then we come to, you know, the OPEX and depreciation and so on and so forth. And that's how we come to a number of around 19.5 crores for the quarter.
Not
applying the traditional bank's P&L format to this, but, you know, this is a prescribed format by RBI. So in that annual report, it is there. In slide 13, we showed it in a simplified form the way I have mentioned.
Understood. Got it. I understand that RBI format. So then as digital adoption increases, this product cost will also come down because you will have lesser incentives to give to the distributor.
I think it's a good point which you're saying. The product cost depends upon the kind of margin which we have set. In our statement, we essentially said that CASA and CMS and you know, also the digital B2B business, if typically my business or product margin, you know, which is 54% in CASA and around 40% in CMS and, you know, around 48 odd percent in the new product which we just said, the more these products become the pie of revenue, the product cost, I mean, the net revenue will keep on increasing. And obviously, one point which is there is our operating leverages. I just want to reiterate that operating leverage or maintaining the leaner cost will continue to be our USP, and we will function on a lean cost-income ratio. And here, the cost-income ratio I refer is the operating cost other than product cost to the total revenue.
Got it. Understood. And just one last question, and it is more futuristic than, let's say, you become an SFB. Do you see CMS being at risk because banks might not be comfortable in another competing bank handling their CMS? Because right now you are not competing for the, like an NBFC or an MFI, you are not competing for the same set of customers. But does it become a challenge in the future, or is it just a cash movement service and it doesn't matter?
So it's a good question. I don't see there going to be a challenge. If I look at the constituents of our CMS, around 55-60% comes from the NBFC MFI portfolio, and the rest comes from other industries, which is your e-commerce, logistics, CRL. So that part will not get impacted at all. The other on the NBFC and MFI, largely these are agents who come and deposit money at our centers. So customers coming and depositing money will be a small portion than the agents who collect from the customers and give it to us. And if I see, most of the banks are already providing them the same services. So NBFCs, MFIs are already using other banks also. So for them to use us will not be a challenge. As an SFB, we might see more banks coming to us from a CMS also as such. But I don't see it to be a challenge at this stage at all. Absolutely not.
Got it. Because my understanding was usually the MFI loan officer will go and collect, and then he will go and deposit in a bank. But now
that is what they do. Rather than depositing in the bank, they come and deposit with the merchant. So bank is only working from 10 in the morning till 2 p.m. So only 4 hours they have, and during that morning hours and everything, they are themselves collecting money from the merchants, from their customers. So by the time they collect money, it's already afternoon, and then to go to a bank to deposit, it becomes more cumbersome. And specifically over the weekends also, where do they go and deposit? So that is where we provide them a very good alternative. Or should I say, banks have become an alternative to what we know is providing as far as NBFC MFI is concerned for depositing cash.
Understood. And just one more question, if I may ask. Can I? Go ahead.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So in the last call, there was some discussions on CMS and collections, and Fino was having a view that it's a similar service. But being from the industry and having done that, I know that when you are managing cash and a customer coming and giving to you versus collections for your overdue accounts is a different process altogether, right?
Yeah.
So have we given a thought of, because last time when it was in discussion, it was that there won't be any additional hiring at the branches for collections. Has there have been a relook at this, or we are still confident that we won't need to hire more people for overdue collections? Normal collection, I understand, but now overdue collections is the question that I have.
So your point is valid. So when we look at from an ecosystem point of view, largely if you look at the large institutions or the NBFCs or the even the fintech companies, they don't have any physical presence. We have physical presence across the country, so there can be multiple modes in which this collections, overdue collections can be looked at. One is the merchant themselves who has sourced the loan can become a agency to collect overdue collections, part of his collection percentage or efficiency percentage, or on, over and above also from a from an incentive point of view. Secondly, we also have about roughly 2,000 employees who are there on the ground. We can use that network also to help us collect the money. And also just to reiterate, Strontech, we are, when as an SFB, we are going to open up all the geographies at the same point of time. We are also going to phase it and open up in geographies where we are much stronger, and then we go deeper into that geographies and parallel geographies. So over and above that, I think there are a lot of collection agencies also who have come up in the last few years as such. So we believe we can manage the collections pretty well. Having said that, when the rubber will hit the road, that is only when we can see. But
yes,
definitely your point is very valid. And we'll put that as part of our, that it's already part of our strategic thinking, but you have a very valid point.
Got it. Yeah, got it. That's all from my side. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we would like to remind participants that you may press star and one on your touchtone phone to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Mr. Mayur, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Congratulations on the good set of numbers. Actually, my question was regarding when we onboard merchant, what due diligence we perform? And my second question is, what is the merchant attrition rate?
Okay, Mayur, just take your first question. For us, a merchant is like a customer. So, you know, whatever KYC norms which we follow typically for a customer and which is mandated by RBI, we attempt to follow all of those which are there for the merchant. See, at the end of it, our model is such that he earns and we earn, and he handles the control function, or he's a representative for the bank out there. So, in simple terms, whatever the KYC norms which are essentially there, and maybe even more, we just go and see his capacity, how well he's equipped to service us, our eventual customers. That's what we essentially, you know, try and do that. There are various checks which happen on the field and also happen, you know, off the field from the back end as well in terms of onboarding a merchant.
Okay. And my second question was regarding merchant attrition rate. And what happens to the customers which are the merchants serving which got off from your platform?
So it's a very good question, and it actually puts a perspective to the entire business model. See, a lot of times in last 3 years, I have been asked this question that does a merchant have exclusivity with you? Okay. I should just reiterate it off that no merchant in this entire business has an exclusivity with you. Okay. You know, a merchant typically will have 2 to 3, you know, kind of handles which are essentially there. Now, in such a scenario, what difference it makes? Okay, just to give you a number, approximately, you know, 50-odd% of our merchant base is active. And, you know, that's what we attempt to leverage. Why would merchant be more active on us as compared to other players? Is two reasons out here is, you know, one is we are a bank. You know, a bank following a model of a BC is something, or, you know, which generates a lot more confidence in terms of as compared to the other fintech players which we essentially do it off. The biggest incentive why a merchant would be active is the amount of products which he can give, you know, which he can sell through us as compared to other fintech players. For other fintech players, he can largely do a remittance or a micro ATM, AEPS. For us, the CASA or the account opening is also a moat which he essentially has. Just to reiterate, the 50% sort of active merchant which we have, and merchant is as good as a customer and more for us.
Okay. So why I'm asking this question is actually when actually 40% of our customers are digital savvy, but the rest 60% treat the merchant or the shop of merchant as a branch. So when this merchant cut off from your system, so how we handle those customers? How we provide better services to them if what they know is the merchant, but if merchant cut off from our platform, then how we provide services to them if they are not digitally savvy? And specifically, we don't have physical branch presence in those areas.
Good question, Mayur. Just to again give an answer, just to put a perspective, you know, the 40% of our own merchants, I mean, 40% of our own customers are active on digital. However, we need to look at the galaxy wherein how do we get these customers, our own customers. During the statement, I think I just mentioned a point that the footfalls, we have approximately 2.5 crore odd footfall coming on to our merchant points. Mind well, these are not our banking customers. These are the customers who come essentially for what other bank customers and perform all of these transactions. So when all of these transaction comes, our merchant, you know, who is growing, you know, at maybe in the last quarter, we had some 68,000 merchant growing. And, you know, those guys will attempt to convert an offline or offers customer to an on, to our customer. And then we will attempt to give this kind of a perspective and this kind of a service to him. Our merchant will facilitate and we incentivize the merchant to take the customer to the digital as well. Here, we are not talking about a typical urban customer. We are talking about a customer who is, you know, non-urban, and for him, the digitalization journey is in the relative nascent stage, or we are the ones who are triggering that digitalization journey for him.
Okay. One another question, if I can ask, is regarding our CASA and CMS segment is growing very well at the rate of 35 to 40% CAGR, and rest 50 to 60% of our products portfolio is stagnated in growth. So once our CASA and CMS portfolio takes bigger chunk of our revenue, so isn't our top line growth will be more than 20%?
Well, I do not want to comment about the, you know, how the top line growth will go beyond the stated objective which we are looking at. One thing which I can definitely say with CASA and CMS, and you know, this I answered in one of the earlier questions as well, that the CASA and CMS growth definitely enhances the margin, which I said was 33% in terms of, you know, after deducting the product cost. So that any high yielding product, if it continues, will definitely result in a higher profitability coming as well. In terms of other aspects where specifically CASA can help us, going back to Rishi's point on the SFB vision, which he mentioned as well, once you are owning the customer, a lot more thing can be essentially done with the customer as well. So that's where our acquisition phase is going through.
Okay, thank you, Ketan, and best of luck to both of you for the future growth prospects. That's it from my side.
Thank you, Mayur bhai.
Thank you. In the interest of time, that would be the last question. I would now like to hand over the conference to the management for closing comments.
So, thank you for participating in the conversation today. As I mentioned earlier, the company is actively focusing on the TAM strategy, where we are looking at transaction as a hook and then building up the acquisition platform. FinO 2.0, which is largely around digital, is also progressing well. We expect that more products and more B2B lines of businesses will come as we move forward into our journey. We have spent quite a bit on the technology, quite a bit. We have spent quite a bit of time today on the technology part, explaining how technology is important and how it is to be built up for the future. And I think that is something we will continue to strive and be on top of it. Our SFB aspiration is very much there, and we are building our internal things around that.
Our application is more or less in the final stages. We should be able to file in the next month or so. So those are from our side, and we look forward to continuing support from all our investors and analysts. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
On behalf of Go India Advisors, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.